Pavilion Opinions Podcast. Number 2. Featuring a painful end to the second test. Will a dropped cattage mean lost matches for Australia? And how the BCCI managed to simultaneously fear the future but hate looking back at the past. Yes, hello, and welcome to the second ever Pavilion Opinions podcast. All that and more coming up today. For the uninitiated, it's really just me, James, from pavilionopinions.com, talking about cricket for a bit. I can't really say I'm back by popular demand, but nevertheless, here I am. So, it's been an exciting week in international cricket. On the field and off the field, we've had Mohammed Amir turning out for a local English side, and on the field action with probable off the field ramifications, and also Shahid Afridi's continued spatting with the PCB sadly means he can't turn out for Hampshire in T20 at the moment. I'm not going to talk about those issues because they really make me want to gouge out my own eyes in frustration at how cricket manages to turn in on itself sometimes. But anyway, there's plenty of more positive things to look at, and not least the end of the second test between England and Sri Lanka. Although it was quite a lame end to the match, the team shaking hands with 15 overs left. England didn't look as if they were ever going to get the wickets they needed, but I still think it's hard to imagine Tubby Taylor or Steve Waugh giving up the ghost at that stage of the game. And if England wants to send out a message of intent to India ahead of their series, their forthcoming series, when they hope to overhaul them as world number one, then I'm not sure that was particularly a tub-thumping thing to do. But anyway, there were some highlights in the match. Pryor had a smashing ha-ha innings. We'll come back to Pryor later, but the highlight for me was Dilshan, the Sri Lanka captain, who hit an absolutely wonderful 193. It was a tremendous captain's innings, leading from the front, and also incredibly brave. If you saw what happened to his thumb after being hit on it, it looked horrific. It looked as if Kathy Bates had been bowling at him, but he nonetheless continued to heap misery aplenty upon the England attack. They had to heap misery on themselves, though, to be honest. England did not bowl well in this match. A lot of leg side stuff, and it was a game when you really appreciated the mastery of control of line and length that Jimmy Anderson has. So it was a funny game, really. You did have these tremendous peaks of performance, but it was also overclouded by another light meter fast when England took the light, when the reading had been substantially worse 10 minutes earlier. It's incredibly frustrating for people watching, for people watching at the ground in particular, and the issue really makes me fear for Sareen Botham's temples, because whenever we have one of these light meter fasts, it really does drive him up into a coronary inducing rage. But you know, understandably so, it is incredibly frustrating for anyone. So anyway, the biggest talking point of the game probably was on that fifth day when Matt Pryor showered the MCC members with shards of glass, having been rather comically run out, and they in turn then showered him with opprobrium, and Andrew Strauss and his naughty wicketkeeper had to trot down to the pavilion and apologise. I suppose it was unacceptable from Pryor, but it was nice to see an England player showing a bit of passion on that fifth day. I think we were not so much lily-livered in our approach to the declaration and our batting leading up to it, but I think we certainly played the percentages rather too much. Anyway, so I guess we never know what happened, really. The ECB put out three very grave statements trying to explain it, which sounded like they'd been written by Ron Davies after he'd been caught badger watching on Clapham Common. But a bit of a storm in the teacup. So we move on down to the final test at the Rose Bowl in Southampton, so I hope you can enjoy that match if you can. So yes, yeah, so on the field matters again over in the West Indies, we've had second and third games of the ODI series. India now have an unassailable 3-0 lead, not least due to the batting of Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli. And it must be an incredible relief to the Indians, because the middle order has been a notorious problem for them over the last 10 or 15 years. So it must be very comforting to know that they finally got a couple of players that might be able to shore up that incredibly parlous area in their side. The other player that's caught the eye has been Mishra, the spinner, who's bowled incredibly well. It's interesting to see the comments about him on Twitter. Some people say he turns the ball too much, some people say he turns the ball too little. And joshing aside, they say that's the latter of which is why he's Harbhajan's natural successor. I think Harbhajan Singh should possibly be a little bit nervous. I don't think there's any doubt that he will start in the Test series against England, but he has been out bowled by Mishra in this series. Mishra's got more wickets, he's got a better average, and he's got a better economy rate. So I don't know if Harby might try and slap him down a bit, though possibly in a slightly different way to the way he did it with Srisanth a couple of years ago. On the West Indies side of things, they have lost all three games, but there have been a few positive sides, not least Andre Russell in the final game, where from number 9 he hit an incredible 92. In contrast with Dilshan, he's more sort of Dick Turpin than Robin Hood, unless he really just stands and delivers. But having said that, he's not an aesthetically unpleasing player, and he's certainly a lot easier on the eye than someone like Kieran Pollard, who's in absolutely awful trot of form at the moment. So I like Andre Russell. He's got a bit of bounce in him. I thought at the World Cup he bowled pretty well. He's quite raw, but he does bowl quickly. He can obviously bat. He's quite charismatic. He's got a bit of a cheeky smile. And along with Darren Bravo, although he's being rested at the moment, and a couple of other players, I think there is some signs that Windies cricket might possibly be on the up, but of course we've said that more than once in the last 15 years. So, whizzing on around the world, down to Australia, where the big news has been the cancelling of Simon Cattich's central contract by Cricket Australia. I think Cattich isn't always a player you'd love to watch, but you're always happy for him to do well. It's possibly quite patronising to say he's a player that makes everything of his natural ability, because I don't think he is a player that's bereft of natural talent at all, but his determination and attitude to the game is incredibly commendable. It would be unfair to say he's from the Chanderpaul school of aesthetics, although he is a left-hander, and he was a little bit crabby in his press conference he gave after the decision. But justifiably so, in my opinion. He's the third highest run scorer for Oz in the last 2 years. He's got the second highest average, and I understand the idea of transition, but I just don't think he deserves to lose his place within the Aussie cricket side. From an English point of view, Andrew Hilditch, the chairman of selectors, remains a genius, and the Cricket Australia media and marketing operation, I just really think they should honour Prince Philip's 90th birthday and make him their president, if only to reduce the number of gaffes that come out of that organisation. But anyway, hubris, hubris, we will see what happens in the next Ashes series. Finally, looking ahead to England's Test series against India, and the BCCI have said that they don't want the umpire decision review system to be used. I disagree with that. I think the UDRS adds an element of excitement and, of course, accuracy to cricket. I think there's also an element of strategy involved. I think during the World Cup, England were rather indiscriminate with their challenges. They use them rather like Ross Noble uses his on Just a Minute. Let's say popular Radio 4 panel show for international listeners. But I think Strauss has been a bit more measured the way he's used them in this series against Sri Lanka. I don't think he's so easily swayed by Broad or Pryor jumping around like madmen, getting him to review the first two close calls that come up. So I disagree with it. I think one of the main qualms for India is focused on a single incident, which was when Ian Bell was given a reprieve at the wicket when he was given out LB because he was more than 2.5 metres down the wicket. That, to me, is a glitch in the system. It does seem slightly absurd. I disagree with that decision, but it's a bit baby in bathwater. But at the moment, the BCCI, they're undoubtedly the daddy of world cricket. And although they can at times make Ryan Giggs seem like the ultimate family man in terms of their attitude to other members of the cricketing fraternity, they have been incredibly successful in making Indian cricket the valuable and powerful commodity it is. So I suppose with that sort of success you get a certain above average amount of influence. So there you are. I don't think it will in any way spoil what should be a wonderful series. Anyway, so I think that's just about it for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening. So for me, James at pavilionopinions.com, goodbye.